This is Keeping It 101, a Killjoy's Introduction to Religion podcast. As of 2023, we are thrilled, overjoyed, over the moon to be part of the Amplify Podcast Network Sustain Stream. What's up, nerds? Hi, hello. I'm Megan Goodwin, a scholar of American religions, race, gender, and politics. I am not, as you damn well know, Elise Morgenstein first. Neither am I a historian of South Asia, race and racialization, or empire. I am popping in to tell you that, as you might have noticed, we have taken a bit of an impromptu sabbatical. We'll be back soon. Pretty soon. We're not exactly sure when. We're still, honestly, playing a lot of catch-up from 2023, which just kicked our individual and collective asses. In the meantime, we are happy, excited, overjoyed to share this chat that we had with the awesome folks at Amplified. We have joined their network. We are super excited to be in conversation with them, and we hope you enjoy listening to us just talk about podcasting and public scholarship and all the stuff we love best. We'll be back soon, we promise. We love you. Hang in there, you know, and do your homework. It's on the syllabus.
Welcome to Amplified, an audio blog, a podcast about the sounds of scholarship from our team here at the Amplify Podcast Network. I'm your host, Stacey Copeland. Today we're joined by Drs. Megan Goodwin and Elise Morgenstein-Forst, two shiny new members of Amplify's Sustain Stream, and the hosts of Keeping It 101, a Killjoy's Introduction to Religion. Megan and Elise join me for episode 2 in our special Sustain Stream feature series that delves into a crucial and always conversation-starting question in the world of academic podcasting. Well, why podcast? We dig into Megan and Elise's unique approach to feminist and frank conversations on religion and highlighting the importance of community building and friendship in the process. They discuss the joys they find in their work and the urgency of addressing issues related to religion today, particularly in the context of American white Christian nationalism. We'll delve into the inspiration behind the podcast and how they envision the future of Keeping It 101. Unpacking religion, one topic at a time, here are Megan and Elise.
I'm Megan Goodwin. I am a scholar of American religions, race, gender, sexuality, and politics. I am the founder and co-director of the Bardo Institute for Religion and Public Policy, which helps folks who got the training but not the job make difficult, scary, but necessary transitions between states of being. I am also the media and tech consultant on the Crossroads Project, which is a loose-funded project hosted by Princeton that promotes, celebrates, and most importantly, funds scholarship on Black religious histories, cultures, and communities. I am a giant design nerd. Most of my work right now is making websites. I'm the author of Abusing Religion. What is it? Literary Persecution, Sex Scandals, and American Minority Religions. And I am currently at work on a project called Cults Incorporated, The Business of Bad Religion. And with Elise Morgenstein first, I co-host Keeping It 101, a Killjoy's Introduction to Religion podcast. And we are in the midst of edits on our very first co-authored book, which we are really trying to call Religion Is Not Done With You, forthcoming with Beacon, hopefully fall 2024.
And your equally busy co-host, Elise.
Oh, well, hi, hello. I'm Elise Morgenstein first, the person in question, and I'm a scholar of Islam, specifically in South Asia, race, racialization, imperialism, and anything we might call the history of ideas in the study of religion. I am an associate professor of religion at the University of Vermont, where I also direct the Humanities Center, which is good fun. And I'm the author of Indian Muslim Minorities and the 1857 Rebellion, as well as the editor of Words of Experience, Translating Islam with Carl Ernst. And I've got this forthcoming podcast book with Megan, which is super rad and we're really looking forward to, as well as a secondary project, a second monograph called Imperial Pandemics, Racializing Religion Globally. So we're busy. And I guess in my spare time, I parent two tiny killjoys who, you know, also have showed up on the podcast a few times.
Yeah. Unofficial third and fourth members.
Unofficial third and fourth members.
So thank you both for hopping on Amplified this month. We are so excited to have you both involved with Amplify. When we got the application, it was, you know, officially had to go through the processes, very serious executive board discussions. But I mean, how could we not accept the two of you and this amazing project that you've been working on together, that I think very strongly speaks to the anti-racist, feminist, thinking creatively about what scholarship is heart at the core of Amplify Podcast Network.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to do
Can I just have a fangirl moment?
Yeah, please,
before?
Please. Yeah, go for it.
I think Elise and I would be doing anti-racist public scholarship religious studies work regardless, but I'm not sure we would be doing it via podcast if it weren't for Hannah McGregor. So we are delighted to be her friendly colleagues at this point, but well before we were in conversation with Hannah and with y'all, we were massive fans, and we just really appreciate all the work that she's done, particularly to promote women and queer folks getting involved in podcasting. So like, when you all put the call out for like, do you want to come and be part of our network? We immediately said yes, obviously. So we're so happy to be here.
Just making the family that we want in podcast world, right?
In all worlds. In all worlds.
And elsewhere.
So I had been listening to Keep It 101 before you submitted to the Amplify Podcast Network as well. I mean, how could I? It's a feminist podcast. There's only so many intersections of feminism and research in the podcast world, although increasing these days, which is exciting. I wanted to hear from the two of you why you decided to get into podcasting in the first place, because this is a question, you know, we talk about among podcasters quite a bit, and there's a lot of, you know, generic how to podcast, get into podcasting discussions out there, but it's always a different story when you actually ask people who've been doing it for a while, and you reflect back on that moment. So why did the two of you decide to get into making Keeping It 101?
I think some of it is that we are joy seeking. Some of it is that we are friends who are family. And some of it is that neither of us are really YouTubers. Like, that's not what we were going to do.
No.
So the appeal of having our face on the radio was actually quite delightful. But I think the actual story is that we've been riffing with each other for, God, nearly what? 16, 17 years at this point. And so these kinds of like, we both describe our work in different ways as stone cold bummers. We both work at these intersections of hate, racism, gender, violence, nationalism, imperialism, these big ideas that do real epistemological and physical violence in the world. And both of us come from the New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, tri-state area in the United States, where joking through pain is how we live. And so we've been cracking jokes about our research for years together, and both have had in our own experiences, like lots of teaching awards and a real commitment to pedagogy. And so I think we both sort of said, we should do something together because we get to work together and that brings us joy. Mm-hmm. We think we're very funny.
We're hilarious.
And so we should have other folks paying attention to how funny we are. I mean, my goodness, what a limit to like only have my students really enjoy my forcible comedy show 3 times a week. And then when we got down to it, it sort of thought like, oh, actually there's a there, that there's a way to teach this stuff about religion to an audience that we always really expansively imagined as not just our students and not just our colleagues, but also like my dad, who's a well-meaning guy who goes to the tiny little New Jersey public library once a week, but does not have the kind of advanced degrees he would need to follow along our written work, but also like doesn't live in, I can't just have my dad come to class every day. We don't live in the same
he
state.
He would though.
That's
Lloyd would.
Illegal. Like we don't have the stairs. He totally would. But when we put all that together, like how do we find joy? How do we do this teaching thing that we're pretty good at a different level in a different way and for a different audience? And podcasting just seemed like the correct medium for it.
I will say in this, as with all things, Elise had an actual plan and I had a lot of enthusiasm and very poor impulse control. So I was really excited, honestly, about the technical side of things. This was an opportunity to play with a bunch of tech that I hadn't had an opportunity to mess around with. And my ADHD brain thinks that that is intellectual chocolate and cannot get enough of it. So I was really delighted to get to play around with new tech and also have an excuse to play around with Elise, which is one of my favorite things to do. But this time we could call it work. Because Elise was the one with the plan and I am the one with the poor impulse control, she was probably aware ahead of time how much work we had signed ourselves up for, at least more than I had. I had not accounted for that at all. But also, we really, I think, thought we were going to do 5 episodes that we would use in our classes. And it would have been a cute experiment. And I could maybe take that back to the work that I was doing, training public humanities scholars at the time in case they wanted to do it. And instead, what happened is, one, I think Elise is 100% correct in that there was a there that we had maybe not fully anticipated, both in terms of how much we'd have to say about this, but also I think about who our audience was going to be. Like, we knew Lloyd was going to listen. This is Elise's dad. We knew our students would listen because they have to. But we almost immediately started hearing from folks in public health, from folks in education, truly all over the world, folks who are doing social work. Got a couple of screenwriters that like popped in. There is a huge public hunger to know more about religion and why it matters. And particularly in the US, I think we're so starved for non-confessional, like, and frankly, non-white Christian narratives around religion that people really responded. It might have, I don't know if I want to say helped, but it certainly, audience-wise benefited from the fact that we launched our show in January of 2020, and then everybody had to be inside for a real long time. And particularly for our teacher friends, they needed something that would work well with remote teaching and learning. So this was an opportunity, I think, for all of us to realize, oh, wow, you can do really effective and honestly really engaging teaching work at a distance through different mediums like podcasting. So delighted to have discovered that. But yes, of the two of us, I don't know that there was like a here's why I must be a podcaster. It was just like Elise knows a lot about podcasts because she listens to them every day. And I get to play with new software and new hardware.
I kind of love hearing that you're like, well, we could just make 5 maybe for the classroom. And then it's almost like the way that you hear people talk about getting tattoos, it's like, I'll just get one. There's one I really say, want.
Show her your arm.
What do you mean?
Yeah, we got hooked.
I have no idea what that's like.
I think we definitely got hooked. But the other part too, I think that made it worthwhile to keep going is how dialogic this process has been. I had not expected the community piece of it, but particularly at a time when all of us were so isolated necessarily for public health reasons, it was amazing to get to be in conversation about this project that we were really excited about with so many folks that we had not expected to be in conversation with. And to have a real like community develop around that was so lovely. We just did a national conference a couple weeks ago, and we had folks like turn up who didn't know each other, who were chatting with each other, who wanted to take pictures of us, which was really sweet, if humbling. And like there's a whole like little community there that just wasn't there before. And that really warms my heart. That makes me feel like we've done something.
You talked a little bit about not knowing that this would continue on, and also thinking back about, you know, the amount of work that it is and not realizing that, you know, a question is coming. And that's the classic, what do you wish you'd known when you started this podcast?
Yeah, workload. I mean, workload. I come from a long line of Jewish New Yorkers. We know how to plan for the worst. And I had planned for a lot of work. And this exceeded my understanding of how much work podcasting would be, in part because it really did take off right away. So there wasn't a slow build. It was by the third episode, we were getting thousands of downloads on the first day that we dropped an episode, which again, we were expecting this to be for our own personal use. And so having numbers like that was so overwhelming. And so I don't know how Megan felt, but for me, it felt like, oh no, we have a responsibility now. Like we have people that are paying attention and we have a community that we need to answer to, which is how my brain works. And I don't think that's how Megan's brain works.
No,
that is how my
brain
works.
But I appreciate you so much.
Yeah.
Or like we said we would do this and now we have to, because we both set a personal goal, but also there are people paying attention. And so we are doing this. So I think the workload would be a thing I wish I knew more. And I also think I'm fully ensconced in the tenure system, right? So I had just earned tenure when we launched the podcast. And then I immediately became the associate director for the Humanities Center. And so I've been working within the system, broken as it is, around how do we count public scholarship for tenure files? How do we count that for hiring? How do we count that as not service work and frankly, not teaching work, but like the work we're doing is research. We are translating our research for a mass audience. And so I feel like the work also doubled on that side because now I became this poster child for a successful public humanities project. And so not only was I doing quite a lot of work for the podcast and all the things we do, right? Like we write episodes and we maintain a website and we write grants and we manage interns and we do social media and all that. But I was also doing all of the internal things, like using myself as a test case for our annual evaluations around what is the point system that we assign to podcasting, because it's not peer reviewed, but also it exists in the space of research. And so I was doing all of that labor too, writing grants and having meetings and doing relentless advocacy, which I'm happy to do, but I hadn't realized that taking on something like a podcast would have changed my own research portfolio so significantly and changed a lot of the side labor of tenure line academic work within both like my university and the academy kind of writ large.
Yeah. I'm going to echo all of that. I want to underline how much labor, particularly Elise, has done on the administrative side of things, because the only reason we had interns, the only reason we had grant funding is because she did that extra labor, which I think would be enormous at any school, but at a land-grant public university, there's so much scrutiny about how finances are handled that it's just watching the amount of work it took for Elise to administer a $5,000 grant was absolutely staggering. It felt like a full-time job just on its own. So like, incredibly grateful that she has invested in this project and in me, because I am neither a planner nor someone who is on close acquaintance with chronological time. So there is, I think, the visible public labor, the invisible public labor, and then there's the like private labor of, okay, we want to do this. And also, if it's going to happen, we have different skill sets. So figuring out how to work together, first to pull the podcast together and then pulling the book together, which was an entirely different skill set that we then developed together. I think I wish I had known that ahead of time, except knowing myself, if I had known how much work it was going to be, I might have freaked out and been like, you know what, maybe this isn't worth it after all. I don't know. Having to stick with an idea, I love to have an idea. I don't know that I love to execute an idea, but I want to flip it because I feel like the what do you wish you had known question is often like a cautionary tale moment for a lot of folks. And I think that's important. But the other piece that I wish I could have told myself in the midst of quarantine as an immunocompromised person is like, this is going to matter to folks in a way that I like truly never imagined. And that's going to sound like tooting our own horns a little bit, but also we have receipts. We hear from folks about how much they value this in their teaching, how much they're valuing it in their work, how much they're valuing it in their lives. And that's amazing. Like realizing that our both professional and personal relationship was going to really grow and be strengthened by coming up against all of these challenges, both the foreseen and the deeply, deeply unforeseen. Like, I think I would have found that really inspiring. And knowing that, yeah, we could, and particularly I, who again, I do not like to follow through on a project, could keep doing this for so long with the right partner. I don't think I could have imagined that 5 years ago. And so that's really amazing too.
It's always about that balance, right? Like someone having passion, someone having a good Google Calendar organization skill, you know, like those are key aspects to a sustained project.
One of us is the chaos Muppet and the other is the order Muppet. And you know who is who.
I'm the Ernie. I accept that.
And I'm Bert. I both like to really watch pigeons and we need, like, breakfast happens on time. I don't understand why we're not ready. This happens the same time every day. But I also think one of the things that I didn't anticipate actually was the way that our friendship becomes this thing that people talk about. And my true joy in life is friends that do stuff together. Like they have managed to make their friendship part of their universe. Like truly nothing makes me happier. Like if you know comedy writers, I know if they're friends. I know if they've been friends since college because this is my special
interest. Ask her about Mel Brooks.
This is my special interest. I really care that people who do creative work get to do it in their communities of care and respect and love. And that other people see us as this community of care and love is like one of the greatest joys of my professional career, to say nothing of my personal life. So like, if I had known that at the start, I probably would have pushed Megan to work even faster, even though we were already going very fast.
Very fast. I will say too, because Elise brought up the contingency piece, in my wildest dreams, I could not have imagined winding up on so many like intro or theory syllabi, which would be humbling and amazing just on its own. But as somebody who got the training but not the job, it is weird as hell, but also like...
It's a little bit of a flex. It's a little bit of a flex. It's pretty great.
Yeah. A little bit. I'm just going to do like a little Alexis Rose hair flip here. Like, oh, am I on your syllabi? Are your students talking about how we define religion? That's wild. And like, again, very humbling, but maybe not as humbling as it should be because that feels real good.
Yeah. Welcome. Welcome to us.
Yeah, you can strike a pose for that, I think. So one of the things I love asking people who have been in podcasting for, you know, you've overhit that first year hump, you know, where people are like, am I going to be a podcaster? Yeah, I guess I'll call myself that moment. And I can tell that your friendship is one of the key ways that sustains your podcast, for sure. But what else kind of keeps you going with keeping it 101?
Part of it is, honestly, I think that the most pertinent driving force for me is the fact that religion just doesn't stop being done with us. Like, we're just never out of stuff to talk about. And it's always been pressing. But I think particularly in our current political climate, watching the way that white Christian nationalism, religious nationalism more broadly, is doing so much damage and so much violence across the globe, that feels really urgent. In a way that scholarship is not often positioned to respond to urgent crises. So having that kind of immediacy and the platform to be able to address those in ways that are hopefully well-researched and well-articulated that feels important. Like being able to participate in our second year in the scholar strike and make even a small contribution toward public humanities scholarship addressing anti-racism and why that's so necessary and why that's all wrapped up in religion.
Yeah, I agree completely. We did not choose the word killjoy in our subtitle accidentally. We didn't choose it because we think it's cute. We really, citing Sarah Ahmed's informative and path-breaking work, we really find killjoy to be the framework through which we do our research and our teaching and this podcast, right? Like, I think that we have a radical optimism that runs through the podcast. Like, we truly seem to teach around, if you know better, you can do better. And also, you should know better. Like, it's not good enough anymore to not know. It's never been good enough to not know. But particularly with all of this information, I mean, we walk around with supercomputers in our pockets. And so there's no reason that we can't be part of that conversation. And for me, you know, I work on Islamic studies, South Asian studies, global imperialism. The journals that I publish in and the languages that I use to research, all of that is really time intensive. And sometimes it reaches audiences that I want to reach, and other times the paywall is way too pricey for scholars in South Asia, whom I'm in conversation with, right? And so doing something that is open access and free, and that is with disability in mind, right? So transcripts and the rest of it, I think for me actually feels redemptive to the other kind of work that I have to do. I have to publish in those specialized journals. I need to pay attention to the diacritical marks and whatever language I'm translating that day, knowing that that is both valuable, but the audience is so small. And I always want the audience to be a little bit bigger. I want my public to be a little bit bigger because I didn't learn all this for my own. I mean, I did learn it for my own benefit, but I think I have something more to say. And I think my research has more of the, I come from a family where activism is thought about as drops in a bucket. So every drop in the bucket raises the water. right? I don't think of myself as much more than a drop in a bucket, but I would like for my drops to go in the bucket instead of like fall outside the bucket. And podcasting is one of those places where I know I'm in the bucket. I know the work I'm putting in is raising the tide a bit. Not a lot, but a bit.
This is a project that is both about seeking joy, but I think it's also about trying to hold back despair and being able to feel like we can do anything that is making any sort of contribution at a time when everything feels so hard. Like that is really important to me. I think it's really important to us. And I think that's why we're still here.
I could keep talking to you two forever, probably, but I also want to be respectful of your time. Was there anything else you particularly wanted to make sure that we chatted about today?
I think it feels important to say that we were excited about Amplify, not just because of our like fangirling around all the work that y'all have done, but I also think that there's something really radical in the idea of taking a commitment to the people doing work that is research-driven and education-forward and putting us together and in conversation with each other. So I just want to say thank you for the work that you're doing and for letting us be part of the team. There's nothing, again, like I said, nothing makes me happier than a team. And so it makes me thrilled to be part of this team. So thanks, coach. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, coach.
The metaphor went crazy. I was not a theater kid. I was a jock. And so my brain goes to like, okay. I'm glad to be on the bench. Let me play.
I want to just ditto everything that Elise said. Like another unexpected joy of doing this work is getting to form communities around other smart folks who share our political commitments and who are doing this work too. I think at a time where despair is so rampant, not that it probably has ever not been, it can feel really isolating to be working so hard and to feel like you're accomplishing so little. So getting to be in conversation with folks who care about this the way that we care about this and are doing truly excellent work and really blazing paths, that's exciting, and it warms my heart.
Cute. Okay. We'll leave it there. Perfect.
Yeah, we're fucking adorable.
Thanks for listening to the Sustain Stream series on Amplified. I'm your host, Stacey Copeland, and our project assistant and editor is Natalie Dusek. If you have comments or additional thoughts on our conversation today or on any of Amplify's initiatives, please do reach out. A special thanks to Megan and Elise for joining us on Amplified this month. Make sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or subscribe to our email newsletter on the website for updates and to keep in touch. Thanks for listening to Amplified, a podcast and audio blog about the sounds of scholarship, coming to you from our team here at the Amplify Podcast Network.
Okay, nerds, that was us chatting with our new friend Stacey Copeland, the audio blog Amplified, about why we love podcasting and why we think it's important. We'll be back soon for our book club talking about Jane Eyre, religion, murder, all our favorite things. We miss you. We love you. We'll be back soon. Do your homework. But, you know, also take care of yourselves and just keep swimming. Talk soon.